This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
So our guest today is the host of The Sound of Young America, and put this on, he is America's radio sweetheart. Welcome to Different Strokes, Jesse Thorne.
Thank you.
So, Jesse, you've created your own little podcasting empire with Maximum Fun. Was that part of your plan, or are you more an accidental media mogul?
I think my media moguldom, such as it is, has really just grown out of my interest in creating media and not having another job. So, you know, I started doing my college radio show at the radio station at my college, and that sort of became a podcast when podcasting was invented in 2004. When I moved from San Francisco, which is where I'm from and where I lived after college, down to Los Angeles, where my former radio co-host lived, we figured we might as well start a show together. And that's where Jordan Jesse Go came from. And then sort of from there, it was a matter of things that came along and kind of improvising as stuff happened.
In everything that you do, though, it does seem like we as an audience get to learn some sort of new side to you. I mean, The Sound of Young America is very interview-style show. Jordan Jesse Go is a bit more comedic. And then you add Put This On into the equation. But how do you decide on what new projects you're going to do?
Well, I'm really just following my own interests and sort of being true to myself and what I have to offer. I mean, I think that Jordan Jesse Go, which is my comedy podcast with my old Sound of Young America co-host Jordan, always the idea was that, you know, when Jordan graduated from college and moved to Southern California from Northern California, where we went to school, the Sound of Young America changed from like sort of a half comedy, half interview show into an all interview show because it was just me. And so the idea was Jordan Jesse Go would be kind of the yin to that yang, so that this would be, Jordan Jesse Go would be all comedy and just us sort of running our mouths. With Put This On, I think, you know, that isn't part of MaximumFun.org on purpose because it doesn't really fit in with the rest of the pieces of MaximumFun.org. I think Maximum Fun is sort of about, you know, it's about comedy and arts and culture from a sort of irreverent but intelligent perspective. And Put This On is just about men's clothes.
And what do you think is the advantage of doing all of this on your own?
Well, I mean, one of the advantages is that I get to do whatever I want to do. I mean, like I said, I occasionally I will describe myself as a reverse entrepreneur, which is to say that I think what an entrepreneur does is looks at the marketplace and sort of tries to identify points of weakness where there's not a lot of, you know, companies representing a certain thing and they can make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. In my case, I've basically just done the things that I wanted to do and then tried to figure out how to wring a little bit of money out of them. and so basically everything that I do is just something that I wanted to do. And at this point, I've gotten to the point where instead of having to pay for like production costs or whatever in a new thing that I want to do, the main thing that I have to do is pay for someone to do some piece of it that I was doing before. So I just maybe 6-9 months ago was able to hire full-time a producer on The Sound of Young America, my public radio show, my interview show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she books the guests. Like I say, hey, why don't we get Randy Newman? And she calls up Randy Newman's people. And that was stuff that I used to have to do myself. And so that frees up a little bit of extra time for me to, you know, write blog posts on Put This On. Or even on Put This On, you know, I hired this guy, Derek Guy, whose writing I liked a lot on his blog, to write some blog posts there to sort of take the pressure off of me there. So I'm partly in the business of trying to find the money so that I can focus my time on the bits and pieces that I enjoy doing the most and where I think I have the most leverage, like the most to contribute.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you love about podcasting?
Well, the nice thing about podcasting for me, you know, as somebody who if I was at a party or something and someone asked me what I do, I usually say that I'm a radio host because it's easier to explain. Mm-hmm. The problem with being a radio host is that even though I own my show and, you know, I decide what goes on it and so on and so forth, there's still a lot of gatekeepers between me and the audience. And the nice thing about podcasting is that I'm connecting directly with an audience, and that audience has, you know, it's a two-way connection. You know, I'm on the radio to, I don't know, maybe 100,000 people in a given show, and the podcast is less than that. But I get 20 times as many emails from podcast listeners as I do from radio listeners, and I think it's just because podcasting is a closer, more direct connection with the audience. I mean, you know, the radio show has never led to someone, however many miles Australia is from the United States.
I think it's like 16,000 or something like that.
Yeah, nobody has ever asked me from 16,000 miles away to come on their show because of my radio program. Now, yeah. Granted, is my radio program on the radio places 16,000 miles away? No.
I don't think so.
Some years ago, I sent a CD to a man who told me he was going to bring it on an airplane to Antarctica to play on the Antarctica radio station.
What's the listener reach like in Antarctica, I wonder?
I think that there are like 250 people that live there. I mean, there's like a whole kind of domed city in Antarctica. And the thing is they can't get... Their bandwidth is reserved for really, really important stuff. And so they bring their entertainment in on airplanes in physical media and then play it on this little tiny radio station. And I'm guessing maybe they have a CCTV. And people get it, like, and they just refresh that, like, once a month.
Oh, dear.
And so this guy was, like, in charge of putting some CDs in a CD book and sending them out to Antarctica. So I was like, yeah, sure, you can bring my show to Antarctica.
Have you ever then bragged, you know, I'm huge in Antarctica?
I never heard from a single person who heard my show in Antarctica. I can't claim for certain that I actually even made it to the air in Antarctica. There may be some kind, they may have, like, gotten an influx of Howard Stern back episodes and just dumped me. Would feel unjustified to make that claim.
I mean, here at Different Strokes, we were talking about before, you know, reflecting on the interview guests that we've had in the past, and I've always said to Jade, you know, oh, I feel like Danny Minogue is our biggest interview guest so far, but Jesse Thorne could be bigger than Danny Minogue. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know exactly his height and weight, but I think that at the very least, I could probably take him. My wife took a ladies' self-defense class, and then she taught me how to push someone's nose into their brain, so...
Not very pleasant.
No, it isn't, but, you know, if he steps to me, if it comes to it, you know, I'm going to take care of business.
This is amazing, but I feel the need to let you know that Danny Minogue is the sister of pop superstar Kylie Minogue.
Okay. I'll give you a list of Australian celebrities I'm familiar with, okay?
Yeah.
In 30 seconds, I'm going to list every Australian I know.
Okay.
Okay, Yahoo Serious, Crocodile Dundee. Oh, Dame Edna. The guy from Summer Heights High.
Chris Lilley.
That guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's famous people who are just normal famous people but happen to be from Australia, like Mel Gibson or whatever. That's the total. I came up with that five.
Well done.
Kidman is Australian, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Six.
Hugh Jackman.
Okay, Hugh Jackman, seven. I've heard of him, but I didn't come up with that.
Okay.
If I don't think I would have come up with that.
In the last year, I've noticed that you've actually started supporting other podcasts through Maximum Fun. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I always wanted to do with Maximum Fun was help other people who were in the position that I was in. Which is to say, making something because they love it and wanting to make money from it, but not being quite sure how to make some money from it. And, you know, one of the things is if you have an organization, it becomes easier, you know, it becomes more efficient. the first show was Stop Podcasting Yourself, which is actually based in Vancouver in British Columbia in Canada. And there was a thread on our message board, actually, about their show that was, I don't know, many pages long. And I thought, well, if our fans are that excited about this weird show hosted by two comedians I've never heard of out of Vancouver, it must be good. And I listened to it, and I thought it was. And I just kind of sent them an email out of the blue and said, hey, guys, if you would you be interested in becoming part of MaximumFun.org? Like, you would still own the show, but we'd raise money together, and you guys would get a cut of the money that we raised. And, you know, it probably wouldn't be a living, but it would be some money in your pocket. And they said, oh, you know, Jordan Jesse Go is one of the things that made us want to start podcasting, so we would love to. And then I had sort of the same experience with My Brother and Me, which is this kind of crazy advice show hosted by these three brothers who all live in different places in the United States, where they were building a huge buzz in our community, like, that I couldn't ignore. Mm-hmm. And I thought, these guys must really have something going. And I listened to their show. I thought it was hilarious. And I thought, you know, I think these guys could use a hand making some money from this. And I think that, you know, there are lots of shows that are great out there. And, you know, there's a lot of shows hosted by comedians where the goal of the show really is to just raise that comedian's profile a bit and maybe get them some exposure that might lead to TV or just higher rates for stand-up at clubs or whatever. And that's not really the kind of show that I've been looking at. The kind of show that I've been looking at is the kind that I can relate to, which is to say it's, you know, people who want to be professional podcasters, you know, where it's not, where it's an end in and of itself rather than just a means to another end.
I'm a diehard fan of your show, The Sound of Young America, because without fail, if I'm not already a fan of the guest, I end up Googling everything they've ever done after I've listened to the podcast. How would you describe The Sound of Young America?
Well, first of all, that's like always the nicest thing to hear, because I think that I've always wanted to choose guests on The Sound of Young America based on merit and not based on fame or, you know, whether they have a catchy story or whatever, but just whether they make something great. So the tagline is a public radio show about things that are awesome. And I sort of do in-depth interviews with creators of various kinds, a lot of people from comedy, but also music and writers and so on. And the sort of common theme is that they're all both, they all do great work, and all their work is awesome in some way or another. So there's not a lot of discussions of the, you know, Israeli-Palestinian conflict. but things that are funny, we're not afraid to take seriously. And we're not afraid to joke around when we're talking about something that's relatively serious.
You know, I guess the thing I've noticed over time, too, is that the guests, I don't know if it is that your show has become more popular, or it's almost like the people who were always awesome and you'd always want on the show are now more popular in mainstream. But it just seems like the guests are, you know, bigger and bigger stars.
Well, I think it's probably both. I mean, one of the nice, it's never been my goal on The Sound of Young America to always be booking the next big thing type of person, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when you book people on your show who are really great, some of them become more famous by virtue of their greatness, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I would never have guessed, frankly, that Zach Galifianakis was going to become a huge movie star. I just thought he was one of the funniest stand-up comedians in the world. Just one of the funniest people in the world. And I would never, I mean, his role on Bored to Death on HBO, I could kind of have predicted something like that happening for him, you know, a sort of New York-focused literary comedy series on a paid cable network. But him becoming a super big movie star was a shock to me. But, you know, the reason it happened is because he's brilliantly, fantastically funny, you know. And so that has definitely happened. But, you know, we have as many people who are sort of veterans, you know, middle-aged people and so forth, as I do young people on the show. I mean, you know, I think a good example would probably be Ian MacKay from Fugazi. I mean, Ian MacKay and Fugazi, in creating hardcore punk rock and in creating straight edge, really changed the world and changed many, many people's lives. I know because I got emails from those people after he was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still making great music. But I love to talk to somebody who's 40 or 50 years old and has done something really amazing because they have the benefit of having had some time to process what's going on, you know?
Is there a guest that you have yet to have on the show that you would love the chance to talk to?
We've been trying so hard lately to book Albert Brooks. We spent months trying to get him for his book and failed. And then I went and saw this movie called Drive, which is just coming out here in the United States. And I don't know if it'll make it to Australia.
We might get it in 3 or 4 years' time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's sort of like an art house action movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the bad guy in it, believe it or not. He plays a gangster in a not-at-all funny role, and is fantastic. And I interviewed the director of the film, and I thought that I might get to interview Albert Brooks, and again, it didn't happen. And I just found out that my friend Kurt Anderson, who hosts another sort of similarly themed public radio show here in the United States called Studio 360, another great show,
mm-hmm.
actually did book him, and I'm really pissed off at Kurt right now. Pulling him out from our clutches. But then, you know, there's other folks that we've just always wanted to have on the show. I mean, I've always wanted to have Randy Newman on, and he has a new album out, and he's been on the road promoting it, but we may actually get to have him on. I mean, I'm knocking on wood over here. I don't know if you guys have that impression, but I'm hoping that that will actually happen. I mean, there are people that I've always wanted to have on that are sort of that you might not think of. Actually, Albert Brooks' brother does this character called Super Dave Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Super Dave ever made it across the Pacific Ocean. He's sort of this just dumb as a stone stuntman character based on Evel Knievel, mm-hmm. the legendary American stuntman. But all of his tricks just go horribly, grotesquely wrong. He has this slightly racist Asian sidekick called Fuji. But anyway, he's now on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay.
And not as Super Dave Osborne, but as a character named Funkhauser. And I just think he's so funny. Like, I think he's one of the funniest people ever, and I would just love to have him on the show. Or Stephen Root, who was, people might remember as the mumbly guy from Office Space or the boss on News Radio.
Yeah.
Just a brilliant comic actor. I've always kind of just wanted to have him on the show, and it just hasn't come up yet, but I think we'll get him one of these days.
Jesse, do you think you'll ever move The Sound of Young America out of your house?
I really like doing The Sound of Young America in my house.
I mean, I'm sure it's convenient.
That is really important to me. Los Angeles is such a dispersed city that there's just no way. Just no one works near where they live,
mm-hmm.
and so just that part of it is really appealing to me, that I don't have to get in a car and drive 25 miles to get to work, which everyone in Los Angeles does.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that also when you're doing an interview show, I think the fact that it's here at my house, for most of my guests, it makes the whole thing automatically much more intimate and personal than it would be, and comfortable than it would be if we were sitting in some weird radio studio. You know what I mean? I've already brought them into my house, so it's not that much further for them to tell me something really interesting about themselves.
Good point. Now, I'm a big fan of your series, Put This On. So first of all, I'd like to compliment you on how handsome and dapper you look in every episode.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
So is this like a regular get-up for you? Do you walk around the house like that all the time? What's the story?
So on the show is about men's style, and on the show, I'm most of the time like wearing a necktie, especially if we're doing something that isn't directly anti-necktie. Like, I don't think I wore a tie during our denim episode. But, you know, if we're doing something where we're visiting a tailor or something, I'm usually wearing a necktie. I do, I would say that I wear a coat and tie when it's not July or August, when it's insufferably hot here in Los Angeles. I would say that I wear a coat and tie 4 days a week, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I basically wear a coat and tie whenever I'm interacting with the public. you know, if I have an interview guest coming in, I'll usually wear a coat and tie. If I have a meeting with somebody, I'll usually wear a coat and tie. Mm-hmm. And then just a lot of times when the weather's cooler, I will, just because it entertains me.
Now, what made you want to do a fashion series like that? Have you always been interested in menswear and men's fashion?
Yeah, it's always been something that I've been interested in. I mean, since I was a kid, I remember when I was picking out my clothes for prom, getting this book out of the library that was of Esquire illustrations from the 1930s and 40s.
Wow.
And then I lost it. And I thought of it the other day. I'm like, I would love, and I had to pay the replacement cost, you know.
Of course.
And I was like, I would love to have that book. That was an amazing book. And so I looked online, and now it sells for like $300. And it's way out of my price range. But it's always been an interest of mine, but I didn't, you know, I'm not a goofus. I didn't wear a tie to high school. I did a little bit during the sort of swing revival, but it wasn't like an everyday thing for me. But I think as I entered my mid to late 20s, I'm 30 now, it was something that felt a lot more natural. And again, since I have these guests for The Sound of Young America and also mm-hmm. Jordan Jesse Go coming into my house, who I don't know and they don't know me very often, I think that if I'm dressed professionally, it gives them a sense that this is a real thing, despite the fact that there's these two tiny dogs barking at them. And I think that is an important part of it. I probably, by the time I was 30, I would probably have dressed like this anyway, just because I've always wanted to dress like this. I just knew that I couldn't do it at 22 and not look like an idiot.
I mean, the series is about dressing like a grown-up, which obviously prompts the question, when should we start actually dressing like grown-ups?
You know, I mean, I think that the thing that's really important is understanding dressing for context. And I think that a lot of men really struggle with that. A lot of men think of dressing as being, you know, as being something that is purely superficial in some way. I sometimes, like, there was an article about our blog, in part about our blog on CNN.com today, and I was looking at the comments, and they basically just summarized as something like, gay, you know? And the main thing was like, I don't ever think about my clothes. If somebody else is thinking about my clothes, they should be thinking about what I'm, like, what the real me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important to remember that you don't just dress for yourself, you also dress for others. And dressing well is a way of showing that you care about your interactions with other people. And, I mean, while I don't advocate a coat and tie for everything, I do think that it's important for even young people, you know, even high schoolers, to have a suit that they can wear when it's time to wear a suit, when it's time to show respect for an occasion, you know, like whether it's a wedding or a funeral or, you know, just something nice to wear to an important family dinner or something.
Of course.
I think it means a lot to have something that you've put some consideration into, and not just consideration from your own perspective, but also consideration in terms of what the clothes that you're wearing mean and whether the message that you're sending is, I care about this situation, when it is a situation that you care about.
I mean, you've done the first series or the first season of Put This On. So in that time that you were coming up with the episodes and everything, has your personal style evolved much, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've continued to develop a wardrobe that allows me to be a little more dressed up on days when I dress up, and that's great. I mean, I think that I've always had, my personal aesthetic has always tended towards, you know, somewhere between, like, country gentleman and mad professor. and I think that that's probably pretty appropriate. I mean, a public radio host is a pretty tweedy profession.
Yeah, it is.
it's sort of college professory, and I think that I dress I dress, you know, the big style rule that I probably break is the sort of brown in town idea that you shouldn't wear country clothes in the city, and I actually do pretty regularly. Although I as a San Franciscan, I'm obliged to argue that Los Angeles isn't a city. you know, I think that aesthetic, however it's expressed, has developed over the years that I've put this on. I mean, it's been almost like 2 years that I've been doing the blog now. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, I learn stuff every day doing the blog. I mean, and the series. It's something where the blog was just an expression of my own excitement at being able to immerse myself in this world in a way that I wasn't able to before. I mean, I think that the internet really democratizes dressing well, mm-hmm. both in that it gives people access to clothing that they might not otherwise be able to afford if they're willing to put in the time, mm-hmm. And also that it gives people access to sort of cultural knowledge that previously was the domain of the tasteful, and the tasteful were the people who had the time to worry about taste, and those people tended to be, you know, the upper class. Mm-hmm. You know, that's less of a thing here in the United States, or I'm sure in Australia, than it is in England or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the great things about the internet is that we all now have access to this information, and so if you care and you want to take the time,
it's out there.
Yeah, exactly. It's within your reach.
Yep. So I was just going through some of the episodes of Put This On last night, and I realized that 11th of the 11th of the 11th is coming up, and it is the date that most closely resembles corduroy. So I was wondering, are you planning to do anything special on that day?
Oh, man, I'll probably wear, when I addressed the corduroy convention, this corduroy society that's run by this wonderful man named Miles Rohan in New York City. It's called the Corduroy Appreciation Club, and they meet every year on November 11th because it is the date which most resembles corduroy. Mm-hmm. And as you said, the date which most resembles corduroy in 100 years is coming up, November 11th, 2011. And at the meetings, you're required to wear two pieces of corduroy, which I prefer because as a Tweedy or gentleman own a corduroy suit. But Miles also was nice enough to give me a corduroy tie. So I may have to celebrate the holiday by combining my corduroy suit with my corduroy tie and turning into a sort of corduroy Voltron. Do they have Voltron in Australia?
I think Jade is familiar with the reference.
With Voltron.
Okay.
Dave is known for not really getting cultural references prior to, say, like 1990.
Oh, dear. Making me sound really juvenile, Jade.
Yeah.
Now, congratulations. I just learned that season 2 of Put This On has reached its pledge goal of $68,000. So where to from here? What's the next step?
Well, we basically, after we made Put This On season 1, we had this big meeting and tried to decide how to proceed. And we had talked to some advertisers, and really the fashion world is very keen on, for the most part, very keen on essentially branded content. And we did not want to make something that was tricking our audience. It's just, you know, none of us do this because we need the money. Mm-hmm. So we decided that the best thing to do would be to ask our audience to fund the season. And we budgeted so that we could do it, quote unquote, for real, which is to say that in season 1, you know, Adam, my collaborator behind the camera, really did everything behind the camera. He ran the sound in most of our shoots. He was the first camera in most of our shoots. Mm-hmm. Some of our shoots didn't have two cameras. You know, he did all the editing, et cetera, et cetera. And so we decided we wanted to have a real crew and do it right. And so the first thing that we're going to do is try and find some producers. And because we're going overseas in season two, we're going to do some shows in New York, but we're also going to do some shows in London and Milan, cities chosen as the great style cities in the world by our readership. We're going to try and find somebody who speaks Italian, for one thing, because none of us do. Apparently, our sometime editor and who will be the director for our second season, Ben Harrison, his mom has volunteered to produce our episodes in Italy because she speaks Italian.
Oh, God.
But I think it might be a little embarrassing if we just showed up with our mom. right now we're trying to find some cool producers, and hopefully they'll have some cool story ideas, but I'm also working on story ideas right now. I mean, I write the whole show myself, pretty much. So I'm brainstorming ideas right now and trying to figure out if, you know, when we're in Milan, we might be able to get Luciano Barbera on the phone or whatever, you know?
Jesse, what can we expect from you next? It just seems like you've got so much on.
You know what? Like, my big thing that I'm working on right now, besides all of these other things that I'm working on, is events. I mean, we do this thing called Max FunCon, which is this weekend in Southern California where we have a bunch of comedy shows and a bunch of cool sort of creativity classes and some speakers, and we all get together in the woods and spend a weekend together. It's sort of like if you've ever heard of the special weekend where all the rich guys get together, like all the 25 richest men in the world get together in Northern California. It's sort of like that, only it's the 25 comedy geekiest people. Comedy geekiest people. And it's just so amazing that we're trying to do an East Coast of the United States version of that. And we're also considering the possibility of doing something like that, perhaps a little bit closer to a comedy festival that is in international waters. And we are also considering doing a Max FunCon in London because my friend Josie Long, who's a stand-up comic out of the UK, came to Max FunCon this year, and she had so much fun that she has essentially insisted that we do one in London.
Oh.
You know, Melbourne actually has a big comedy festival as well.
Well, I know. The reason I know about Melbourne's comedy scene is this.
The Kristen Schell is a horse?
I do know about Kristen Schell as a horse, yes. in fact, I just did an interview this morning with my friends from this brilliant American public radio show called Radiolab about Kristen Schell as a horse.
Yeah.
This great sketch that Kurt and Kristen did at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. But no, I was at a wedding, and I was seeing some people from Melbourne. And those nice people from Melbourne, I was trying to explain to them who is on my show and what my show is, and I kept naming people like Ian MacKay or like Henry Rollins or Judd Apatow or something, and they didn't know who any of these people were. And then I remembered that a guy I knew from the San Francisco comedy scene, who is, I mean, a headlining comedian in the United States, but not a particularly notably successful one in the United States, though he's very funny, is super famous in Australia for some reason that none of us can understand, besides that he's very funny. And I was like, I know Arj Barker. Like, oh, God. Specifically, they were like, Arj Barker? And then I dropped Maria Bamford on him, which I was hoping would also work, but they didn't know who Maria was.
Yeah,
but,
Maria's gotten big in the last year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like the fact that, you know, Maria is also a successful stand-up comedian in the United States, but not a super famous one.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that these comedians that are my friends that I like have this one place where they're famous. They're like on all the television shows and everything. Like here in LA, they're like trying to book a commercial or whatever. They're just trying to get a gig at the Boise Funny Bone, and then they head down under, and all of a sudden they're like Mel Gibson
or Danny Minogue,
exactly, whoever that is. You have to understand that in the United States, we barely know who Kylie Minogue is. I mean,
that was a test.
a stretch. Oh, shoot! I thought, what about Colin Hay?
Yeah, Colin Hay is Australian, yes.
That guy's a great guy, too. That guy's been on The Sound of Young America. He was fantastic. He's a very funny man, Colin Hay.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show today, Jesse. If you want to find out more about Jesse Thorne, you can go to MaximumFun.org. Thanks, Jesse.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you very much for reminding me of all seven of the great Australians of the arts.
And now that you've been on our show, you can go ahead and Google who Danny Minogue is and understand why it's such a big deal that Dave has said that you're bigger than Danny Minogue.
I thought you were going to say that now that I've been on your show, I'm the new Arj Barker.
I'm sure you will be.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.